This is the real weepy and like tragic part of the story beginning, oh my brothers and only friends.
I'm in for four potential getaway drivers. Go.
No!
But I was told that I could listen to the radio at a reasonable volume.
No!
Excuse me, we have a little bit of a hurry.
Hang on, Voltaire.
It's yet another long series of perversions in an attempt to avoid responsibility.
Hello and welcome to another stunningly picturesque edition of This Just In, the podcast that couldn't give a shit less about the Da Vinci Code. The dark days ahead deport Battlestar Galactica and favors wholly the precepts of intellectual promiscuity. Now, it feels like every time we start a show, it's with an apology to our fans for not being consistent with our podcasts or posts on the weblog. But this time, it's going to be different. This time, I want us to look past this rocky relationship we've sporadically cultivated with one another and look ahead to the future. Our diligence and hard work over the past few weeks has been focused primarily on putting out issue 2. The laborious, seemingly endless days spent reading and rereading, striking and bolding, learning harmonica and embracing other diversions are almost over. Once finished, we will emerge from our bunkers of solitude, aka our computer rooms, and once again fatten up for a 4-month-long hibernation until it's time to churn out yet another hit issue of the memes. As for your hosts, I'm Chris View, podcasting from Detroit.
And I'm Tager Higgin, podcasting from Los Angeles.
And aside from being taxed and overexerted, we're especially happy at hosting this podcast. On this week's show, we intend to explore the unsatisfyingly retarded world of fighting. stupid world crazes like reading and actually believing in the entirely fictitious world of the Da Vinci Code, and some reader mail, and if we get a chance, an in-depth discussion on which of our senses are too badass to give up, and which one will lose out in a battle royale for sensory domination. Tanner, which of these topics do you want to start with today?
Well, I love how, first of all, you've made it sound like we are diligently laboring on issue 2. That's such a good good ruse to pull over on the audience, that we work so hard all year, and then like finally it comes out, when in reality it comes down to like the final 2 months, when it's an amazing mad dash to the end.
I'm not kidding you when I say that I have been cultivating my harmonica skills, and I've got it right here. So, and I expect soon enough to be John Popper. Except for not half as fat, or then slender again, and then re-fat.
He's re-fat now?
I think he is, or at least he looks like he's going to be fat any day now.
The fat remix? I guess we'll start out with the feminism thing, because that's probably the last thing on people's mind. Was that in the last podcast we did, I think, actually.
Yes, it was.
That seems like it was 2 months ago.
Well, let's revisit it finally, because I think at least based on what was written to us, I think it's worth people hearing, because, you know, of course we're passionate about this feminism issue, and to get a perspective from an actual female is certainly nice. So go ahead and, I guess, read that.
Yeah, we're all proud of ourselves, because usually anything we do suddenly gets masculinized and carved out in only a male arena, and no women have any interest in it. And that's one of the reasons why we shut down our old website and forum, and we're hoping that this project got more feminine interest, and hopefully that's working. Our friend Diana wrote in response to our feminism discussion, sort of expanding it with her own experience of why feminism is sort of in trouble right now. She related an experience from when she was attending a university, and that they had one of the most notable feminist speakers, Naomi Wolf, give a speech. She asked people about women's rights and, you know, do they think that that women should get equal opportunities, equal pay, all that sort of thing, that everyone raised their hand. And then afterwards she asked if who in the room thought they were going to be, who in the room would consider themselves to be feminists, and only 4 people raised their hands. And she was reminded of a Q&A in Jane Magazine with Drew Barrymore, where they asked if she would consider herself a feminist, and her answer was, no, I'm an equalist. And Diana said that this response made her want to throw the magazine across the room. And she's like, my concern is that you have people really working for equality and women's rights and trying to do something meaningful, and their work may be dismissed or at least diminished because of the language people use to describe themselves. And she was relating this to the stigma now of feminists being sort of the shaved head, you know, camo wearing sort of butch dyke, for lack of a better term, image. And I was thinking that this sort of goes in line with what I was saying, in that feminism has sort of become detached from its politically relevant basis and made into nothing more than a style, you know, like a Butch Dyke style or something that can be assumed, and it doesn't connote a politically minded progressivist anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And that this in some sense, for true feminists, this is becoming sort of disturbing. And for others, it's just becoming a safe way to, like, I'm going to shave my head and now I'm a feminist without having any sort of knowledge about what the term means.
I think because I accidentally deleted this email, but I recall Diana saying something about the term, like, how is it, that the image is tied to the term feminism, so, mm-hmm. which is basically what you've been saying. And I think, I mean, what if we have to be malleable here? What if we have to say, okay, maybe feminist is a shitty term. What if equalist is the term that we need to start, you know, propagating and make it so that the same issues now fall under that term rather than, you know, trying to fight for this word feminism? What if we put all issues under a new term that, you know, might blindside some people and make them almost dupe people into believing feminist issues without having to ever call themselves a feminist anymore? If there was a way we could, you know, I know it's semantics and all that, but it seems like it's almost impossible to get rid of the image of a feminist and the word feminist. You know, they're just too interchangeable, and that's what's evoked. And if there's a way we can just change the term and dupe these retards who don't want to, you know, who just want to separate themselves at all costs, if there's a way we can do that, what do you think? Do you think there is a way we can do that? Can we dupe people?
But doing something like that is admitting that you lost a sort of battle in the war, I guess. It's sort of...
But isn't that more like the rebels fighting the Empire? You just have to change your tactics, man. You might have lost... You might have war, but you need to regroup and get back to Endor.
I know, but it's... I think a lot of feminists would have a problem with that, because it's like giving up something. It's giving up their term that's been appropriated by, you know, a group of people who are masquerading as feminists who are actually reinforcing masculine hegemony, I think. You know, by giving that term up, it's then been absorbed by them. I guess they would consider that a battle in itself to refashion the term in a way that suits them. But I think it all boils down to is a reinforcement of what McRobbie was saying, that, you know, everybody wants to believe that the time has passed and it needs to be replaced with a sort of less radical woman who just sort of, you know, fits in. And that's why people don't want to raise their hands for feminism anymore, because they think that it doesn't quite apply to them anymore. That's why Drew Barrymore says that I'd rather use the term equalist. Because she sees feminism as...
Anyway.
Yeah, she's a moron, but she feels like it's tied to a certain time of that radicalism was needed and that it's no longer needed anymore. And that's really a problem.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if we'll ever settle this, and I don't think you and I have the answers because we have penises, but...
yeah, we're the bad guys.
Yeah, so I don't know if anyone will listen to us anyway. In terms of what Diana brings up, first off, we appreciate her feedback because that's badass that she would even take the time, but... Hopefully something is done to remedy the situation, because it's honestly, it's just one, it's another one of those fronts where it feels like we're going to lose it, and if we lose it, it's such a travesty, and people don't seem to realize that. And so if we chalk up yet another loss to, you know, to the rights of human beings, you know, I never want to see that happen. So hopefully
because I was just in Borders this weekend, if you step foot in any bookstore now, and they always have those tables laid out with, you know, the new paperbacks, there's always at least five of those pink or lime green, you know, sort of like girly colored books with a martini glass and a purse on it. That's like this chiclet revolution, which is sort of this new feminism, this post-feminism that McRobbie was talking about, where it's all about maintaining female independence by buying stuff from corporations run by men, you know? I mean, it's all about just becoming an economic asset. It's unbelievable, and people think this is empowering. Like, shopping's empowering.
Well, they've finally earned their right to be consumers. Way to go, you're a breadwinner.
You know? You're now,
welcome to the club.
You're now a schlub like the rest of us.
Yeah.
There was so much potential, and now it's been lost. The Da Vinci Code.
I hate it. Next topic.
All right, next topic.
I don't know. This is another perfect example of these world trends that people get hooked on, and I think this falls in line with Harry Potter, but less. Harry Potter is less. It pisses me off much less. I've actually talked to people who they've read the Da Vinci Code, and somehow they actually believe in the conspiracy that is fictionalized within that book, and they actually think that there is a genetic line of human beings who can trace patriarchically, because of course, you know, we're in Western civilization and that's how we do it, can trace through their ancestors straight back to J.C. the carpenter, the man who transcended all aspects of life and is suddenly the Messiah. They believe that there's actually a way to trace that lineage. I'm here to inform them that all of us in existence can trace our lineage back to Jesus Christ just based on DNA in and of itself. So there's nothing new to that. Now, whether or not it presupposes also then that JC had sex and then procreated, which I'm pretty sure the Bible, while it's cloudy on this issue and doesn't even address it, I'm pretty sure the Bible and people who are biblical scholars would probably go entirely against this notion. But of course, you know, when you've got an author like Dan Brown, he's a pretty poor author, I think, when it comes to he's very formulaic, and the Da Vinci Code is just another one of the books that he's written that follows the exact same formula, which is upsetting because it shows a lack of originality in an author, but whatever, he's a bestseller, I'm not, so what can you do? The fact is, though, this Da Vinci Code fad needs to court case needs to cease, because it's really upsetting to me that it's getting more publicity than it needs to. You can have a best-selling book, and you can have people love it, but the minute people start actually trying to trace back and look for an international conspiracy, that's when I draw the line and say this book is out of fucking control, and we need to stop people being retarded.
It is amazing that this book, of all books, has become such a phenomenon. Mm-hmm. And I think you were dead on when we were discussing this earlier, that it taps into people's secret desire to be a super sleuth.
Yeah.
And for some reason, and I guess that also, I mean, that shows why shows like CSI are huge, and every fucking, whenever new shows come out on television, I don't know, you know, when they're introduced, but it seems like whenever there's new shows coming out, there's always one where, like, two cops in New York, you know, one hard edge, one a little softer, one maybe black, one maybe white, you know, and they're gonna get down to the deep shit and figure shit out and punch people in the face and uncover evidence, and for some reason everyone wants to be that, like, sleuthy type person who uncovers mysteries. And I mean, why does that notion appeal to people?
Because people want to be better than your average human being. People, if you were just your basic, you know, average Joe, then you've got nothing to offer society. You're just one of the regular dregs, you know, walking around doing your 9-to-5. But the minute you can be extraordinary, you have to exploit that. And so these people exploit it through this. Other people decide to be proactive and, like, try to write or make music or things that maybe they've got some sort of, they can excel in that area. Now, these people, they create fictitious bullshit to explore, and then they continue to perpetuate how false this is through pseudoscience and things that actually dupe other people. that's working against humanity. It's not doing anything positive for us. What it's doing is it's perpetuating the myth, and there's no need to. We know for a fact that there's no one in existence on this earth who can honestly trace their lineage back to Jesus Christ, but that all of us can somehow or another claim a piece of that DNA if indeed he did exist. So these people want to go around, and yeah, they want to be super sleuths. And there's no room for super sleuths in this world, because those are the same people who go around to haunted, quote-unquote, haunted houses with their bullshit radars and you know, electromagnetic detectors, as though that detects matter in dead people or something. I don't know what...
yeah, I don't know what science they're basing that on. Like, what hypothesis has been tested and proven that ghosts exist as, like, electromagnetic fields?
Exactly. Or that they exist in any, like, I love...
Hot and cold spots.
Yeah, I love it when you're watching their show, like, oh, shit, hold in here. Oh, shit, look at this radar. It's going off the charts. And then... And then they go to review the tape, and they see a speck of dust fly in front of the camera, and they're like, oh, that's an orb. That's an orb. That's how spirits manifest them. Man, if you're nitpicking dust particles in front of the camera lens, I'm pretty sure that the field that you've chosen is fucked up. So there's no reason to continue exploration of that, man. Like, you need to find a new hobby. Stop trying to differentiate yourself from the rest of us. And do something positive with your life. But these people want to believe there's the Illuminati, and they want to believe that the Freemasons are somehow that they're somehow behind. They want to believe there's seven Jew bankers controlling the world's funds. You know, they want to believe in these type of things.
That's not in the Da Vinci Code, is it?
No, I'm just saying in general, people are fucking stupid.
I think that's the brilliance of the Da Vinci Code, though, is that it launches a two-pronged attack on morons. And that number one is that everyone, if they're polled, is going to say they're above average intelligence, no matter what. You know, everyone thinks they're smarter than the average bear. And that it taps into that feeling that everyone thinks that they can be a super sleuth, that they can uncover shit, and that they've got so much intelligence that they can figure shit out that no one else can. Mm-hmm. And that, secondly, it taps into everybody's... You know, people love genealogy, they love to trace ancestry, because their lives are so depressing and ridiculous and inane that they want to uncover some person who's had sex with some other person in their family. And that person then makes them a better person somehow. So they all want Jesus Christ to be in their family tree, so then they're somehow amazing via that connection. And that's a two-pronged attack that makes it so successful, is that combination of tapping into retards.
And, you know, I have to admit, like, there's a time in my life where I would have been duped by this, because, like, when I was watching Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, I believed in, like, the Knights Templar and all that shit. I believed that there was, like, a brotherhood trying to keep the Holy Grail in check.
Yeah, but you were 12, I think.
Exactly. That's my point. I saw that movie, and then, you know what? As part of my double feature Saturday, I went and saw UHF, like, an hour later.
Yeah, that just shows the level of maturity you're at when you had the capability of believing in those things.
But, you know, now I've had my awakening, and I'm happy for it, because I don't need to look at old paintings by fucking Da Vinci and be like, oh, shit, that person sitting next to JC at this Last Supper table is probably a woman because she's got feminine skin. I don't believe in the Last Supper anyway.
Yeah.
I don't care.
Like, exactly.
It doesn't matter to me. So, you know, all these people looking for these relics of yore and trying to say that, here's one thing I do believe in with Indiana Jones. They found the Lost Ark, dude. And you know what? It's in a big-ass warehouse kept under wraps by the U.S. government. The only conspiracy that's true is that. That's it. Because Steven Spielberg filmed it.
There's a second conspiracy at work within the filming of the Da Vinci Code, and that's that Paul Bettany's a good actor. Because Amber brought up the amazing point that Paul Bettany, every movie he's in, sucks. And before she said that, I was thinking, Paul Bettany, he's a he's got to be a decent actor because he's English and skinny and like skinny English
guys. He looks like Mordred from Excalibur.
He's just one of those guys when you look at him, you're like, he's got to be a good actor. He only does good films. And then when you look at his IMDb, every film he's ever been in sucks. A Beautiful Mind, Dogville, Master and Commander, Wimbledon, Firewall, and now The Da Vinci Code?
Yeah, not a good actor.
he could have everything going for him with his English accent and skinny body, but he doesn't do anything.
but I will say this for him. He is the father of a child with the hottest actress in Hollywood, Jennifer Connelly.
Yeah, if he's done nothing else right.
But you know what? If I had to have a life that was titled hit or miss, I would hope that my one hit would be that I impregnated Jennifer Connelly. That's all I'm
saying. The title of your autobiography, hit or miss.
Yeah. Exactly. So, and he was in A Knight's Tale. He played Geoffrey Chaucer. I vaguely recall that.
Wait, are you trying to pass that off as a good movie?
No. Hell no. Hell no.
You said it sort of positively. You're like, oh, he was in A Knight's Tale.
Oh no, God no. You know what? Pretty much any movie with Heath Ledger, I'm pretty much out of. And any film that tries to take one of my most revered pieces of literature and then contemporize it is pretty much it's not
with a killer soundtrack.
Yeah, I remember when they were playing like Queen's "We Will Rock You" while they're getting ready to joust. That was awesome and hip. No,
it was
not
such a
at
perfect
all.
Example of people trying to make something hip that were very unhip.
Yeah, exactly. It's people who pretty much got... I keep saying pretty much. That's my new statement, apparently. They got everything wrong with that film. So, Paul Bettany, you can fuck off. So, our Da Vinci Code conversation boiled down to Paul Bettany is a shitty actor. But that's... I haven't even seen the trailer, and I'm pretty much certain that I won't. You know what? Here's another bet. The tagline for the film is "Seek the truth." Well, if we sought the truth, we would realize this is a fucking bullshit movie. So why would they invite that? I don't understand. I just don't get these people.
Well, we wanted to talk about fights, but I think we might be nearing 30 minutes already.
Hold on. What specifically do you want to talk about with fights?
I just wanted to relate the hilariousness of kid fights, really. That's
okay, well, we can quickly do that. I got into a fight once when I was a kid because I thought a kid's face looked fat. That's the only reason I fought the kid, and it just goes to show you that there's pressure put on kids today and yesterday of all generations to just fight people because they're different. What do you think about that?
Yeah, and we completely don't see that at work in world events nowadays. There's no... It's amazing that we've got a government run by a kid that... that was a Freudian slip. They're not kids, they're adults who who look at people and see that they have brown faces and want to fight with them.
Like, yeah. You know, at some point in a man's life, they realize that they've overcome the urge to beat someone up because they've got a nose that's got a slight bump in it, or an eyeball that's slightly in the other, and they realize that they can look past that and realize that somebody's like a good person. Whereas when you're in fourth grade and you see that kid, his name was Jesse Kreider, you know him. He became a good friend of mine later in life.
But he did have a big head.
Yeah, but I needed to punch him in the face. It had to happen. I realized at that point in my life that if I did not punch him in the face, I would forever regret it. So once I laid that hit on, and then the lunch ladies noticed me punching him, I only hit him twice, because I punched him once. It was weak as hell. It was like just like a slap to the face, but with a closed fist. And then he was like, "What the hell?" And then I went in for the second hit, which was maybe slightly more intense, which would be on the scale, it would be like you accidentally, you know, hitting your chair with your toe, you know, and stubbing it. But it was like that type of pressure to his face, and then the lunch lady, and she was like, "Hey, what are you doing?"
Were you?
Best
so
butt.
you were trying to hit him, but but your weakling arms couldn't muster any strength to deliver a proper blow. Like,
in fourth grade, I was approximately 4'4". I had about 60 pounds to my frail frame. There was no way in hell I was kicking anyone's ass.
Yeah, but
I knew it.
But I don't think kids know it. I think they like to believe that they're actually tough. Because I remember having at least every week a conversation on the playground about how if a robber came into our house, you know, what every kid would do to that robber. Like, you know, I'd punch him in the face.
You had Home Alone power. You knew, based on how well Macaulay Culkin was able to take out robbers, you knew that you had more strength than that douchebag. So,
but you're
obviously can do it.
Your description of punching Jesse Kreider in the face reminds me of in junior high, probably one of the biggest losers to have ever existed in any junior high ever was a kid named Jason Gunter, who I believe came from your elementary school. And this
my elementary school was full of hard asses.
This kid was, I mean, just. He's like Pigpen, you know, like he
his face was always dirty.
Yeah.
Always.
He was like a garbage pail kid.
Yeah.
Like
his hair was all straw hair and curled, and like his face always had smudge marks on it. Like didn't his mom wash anything? Or didn't he wash himself?
And it's not like he was any more poor than anybody else either. He was just one of those kids that was dirty like that.
Yeah. I don't know how any parent could allow that to happen.
And this kid is one of those kids who, he had nothing else to do better with his time other than trying to start fights with other kids, because it's the only way he could draw any meaning for his existence. And to give you a sort of background in his character, I remember one day when he came to school with a bag of ice and was... Mind you, this is seventh grade. This kid could not be any less tough. And he comes to school with a bag of ice and he's icing his knuckles, telling me that he's icing his knuckles to get him numb for a fight later.
Wow.
So he doesn't feel when he's punching kids or okay. And so I was talking to somebody in their foreign language class before class, but it wasn't my class, and he was in this class.
Exploratory language, you mean?
Yeah, yeah. And he comes up to me, and apparently this pissed him off, that I had the audacity to come into his class and talk to people in his class, you know? So he comes up to me, and I forget what he said. It was probably... I don't even know if he could speak English at that point. I think he was still learning.
In the manner.
And so he comes up to me, he starts saying all this shit, and then he punches me in the face while I'm standing in the doorway in front of class. I don't know if it's because he thought I had a fat face or, you know, what his primal urge just came over him that he felt that I needed to get punched in the face at that moment.
Oh, shit.
And I'd been in a fight before, but it was mostly me and John handing these two kids their asses on the elementary playground and basically throwing them down and slapping them around.
Right, okay.
And so this was the first time I'd ever really been punched in the face, and he punches me in the face, and like, at first I was shocked, and my face got all red, and then I thought like, oh my god, that didn't hurt at all! And like, and I started laughing. And then I believe the person I was talking to was Bill Steuben. And then at that point, the bell rang or whatever. And I said to Bill, I was like, hey, see ya, as I was laughing, and I walked out of class. As I was walking down the hall, I was thinking, that had to be so humiliating for Jason Gunter to have, in front of class, wound up and punched somebody after having shown everybody every day that he had to ice his knuckles for fights, and then punching a very not tough kid, and that kid laughing.
I actually fought Jason Gunter back in elementary school, because... At the time, I was seeing this girl named Ambie Colin. She was hot stuff back then. And so Ambie and I, like, Ambie told me flat out, she was like, you have to prove yourself. If you can't play kickball and win, then you're not my boyfriend.
It's so ridiculous.
I was like, dude, you know what? I think I can corner kickball right now. So I went over and played kickball, and at one point, Jason Gunner argued, I threw him out. And this jeopardized my ability to continue seeing Ambi Colin. If I didn't throw him out, she was going to dump me right there. So I had to ensure that I won this argument. Well, for him, an argument is always won through fisticuffs. So he tries to fight me, and the only maneuver I knew at the time, because this was probably like the first fight I got into that I can think of that was like where I physically harmed somebody. And I grabbed like near his collarbone, and I pulled down, and I scratched his skin, and he was like, ah! And then I kicked him. And then... I don't know how it ended. I think maybe people split us up, or there was just kind of a consensus, like, this isn't going to go anywhere anyway, so who gives a shit? And, like, I never got punched, but I think I won that fight. So I've actually beat up Jason Gunner, and you've got punched in the face by him, so I'm tougher than you by default. I'm just saying, if we're going to start doing male superiority, I'm the alpha male. Based solely on my third grade experience.
I remember it going through my mind, like, should I punch this kid back in the face? And I was like, I don't want to get suspended. So I was just like, it didn't hurt. I'm just going to walk away. Well, but that had to be so emasculating then.
Oh, yeah. Before we end this discussion, because I realize we are losing time here, but what's the best fight you ever saw? Because there is no real, like, best fight, because all fights, every party in the fight looks like an idiot. But what's the best fight you saw in your entire life?
Now, this is a good question, because the best fight I ever saw, I never saw. And that was once again in junior high when kids were, you know, it was like an apish battle for superiority over nothing. And I was sitting in an algebra class, and there was this one kid, of course, from your junior high, which was like, you know, essentially a prison training ground for bad kids.
My elementary school.
Yeah, your elementary school. This kid named Jejun Kang, who was at least 15 years older than the oldest kid in junior high, he was in my algebra class, and he told us all before class that he was going to fight a kid during class, and we were like, yes. And so during class, he asked Mr. Palmer if he can go to the bathroom. So he goes to the bathroom, and we hear outside just like a on somebody's face. And it was Dejun Kang, like, knocking some kid out. And then we hear from the hall, he's got a golf club! And so somehow Dejun Kang had gotten a golf club and was going to hit some kid in the middle of class in the hallway that he agreed to meet in the hallway during class with a golf club. But Mr. Palmer ran out and restrained him. And even though I didn't see it, hearing the fist hit the face and then hearing somebody shout, he's got a golf club, were just so hilarious and perfect.
Dejun Kang, in elementary school, there was this kid, Austin Milne, and he always wore his trippy fat goo. That's triple fat goose for anyone who doesn't know the terminology, which is a down jacket that was only for rich kids who also wore British Knights. And Dejun Kang, like, had agreed he was going to fight Austin Milne. And this is weird, because he did the exact same. He walked into Austin Milne was a year ahead of us, which is, you know, you do not fight a kid a year ahead of you unless you know you're going to kick his ass. And he walked into class, punched Austin Milne in the cheekbone. The kid's cheekbone, like, shattered. I mean, shattered. His eye caved in. The police were called. Dejun was put under arrest in the principal's office. It was the best thing of all time, because none of us liked Austin Milne. But I was thinking, like, when you brought that up, there's a few fights that happened at West Utica when I was a kid, and then one fight that I would... There's two fights that happened in junior high that I liked, and one that happened in elementary school. This is going to be a long podcast, but I have to say this. In elementary school, he was the new kid at school, and yeah, he had the name of a rock guitarist. Anyway, or no, Steve Nye, that was his name, Steve Nye. Anyway, he came into school, and just to... Because I think he was scared he was going to get his ass kicked, he had to immediately, you know, different... It was like going to prison, so you have to get in your first fight immediately. So he got into a fight, and he picked this kid, John something or another, and so he punches this kid in the face, beats him up, and John, like, retreats to the school, and everyone's like, oh my gosh, Steve Nye beat the shit out of this kid, way to go. John this John kid with a neon green baseball bat, aluminum bat, walks right up to Steve Nye, clubs him in the head. Bam, like, down. Steve Nye is down. John has won the fight, you know, in the round two, and there's no way Steve Nye is going to recuperate from this. The lunch ladies restrain John, take the bat from him, and John, I think, only got a detention at that time.
For clubbing somebody in the face with a bat.
I'm sure the teachers were probably worried that they were going to get clubbed in the face.
That's unreal.
So anyway, that was one of the coolest things I ever saw. And then in junior high, two fights. One of them, if you remember Sang Wan Pak, not Sang, who was in our grade, but Sang Wan,
New
martial arts. And he fucking roundhoused a kid in the face. It was the best thing I ever saw in my life. The kid fell to the floor, done. It was like, you don't see stuff like that. But then the ultimate fight was, do you remember Penny Neuhauser?
Yeah.
Okay, that girl was stupid. And she was fat, and she liked to pick on this girl, Laura Dinger, who we also subsequently liked to pick on. And during biology class in ninth grade, I was in history class, and then across the hall was a biology class, and I heard before class that Penny Neuhauser was going to fight Laura Dinger, and I thought it was going to be the coolest thing ever. And after class, we walk out of class, and Penny Neuhauser exacts a strategic China of Laura Dinger. Laura Dinger goes down in one
shot. A strategic what?
And a strategic kick to the crotch of Laura Dinger.
Oh!
And Laura Dinger goes down in one shot, and us, as juveniles, are like immediately, there's four guys, I think Joe Pye was there, and all of us immediately are like, yeah! And she's down on the ground, and this poor girl, to this day, you know, I feel so bad for her because she got kicked in the vagina and had to immediately be laid out on the ground because no one should have been cheering for Penny Neuhauser. I would have punched that girl in the face. So anyway, I'm sorry. Those are, like, the best fights I ever saw live in person.
See, but the thing is, when fights started getting serious, they started losing their luster. The best thing about kid fights is there was something sort of juvenile and playful about them, you know?
Right.
Of course, not when a kid gets hit in the face with a baseball bat. But usually they were just sort of funny. And that's what made them so cool, you know?
If it comes down to fighting, my whole assessment of it is, it's so archaic that it's unnecessary. And typically the people who want to start them are the lowest of the low, and sadly the ones who are going to propagate our species. So people like you and I will not be continuing the existence of us. It's those who establish their dominance through picking fights and then actually following through with the fights they pick. They're the ones who are going to continue to have sexual intercourse and have babies.
It's people who still fight are people who all they've got is what they were given, and that's their muscles and their fists. And like...
Yeah.
All I've got in life is to go out to the bar, get drunk, and try to fight somebody, because there's nothing else I can do with my life that I can derive any satisfaction from.
Yeah. All right, well, it doesn't look like we're going to get to the battle royale over sensory domination, but...
That'll be next week.
Yeah, we can do that next week.
Or 3.5 weeks from now, depending on...
Let's remind people, by the way, we are doing a vidcast, a video cast.
Oh, yeah!
We need to let people know.
Yeah.
I don't care what day we do it on. Preferably on Thursday the 6th of April. Because that'll give you time, at least, to you know, let it digest on your computer. And we can figure out what the hell we need to do to make a video cast possible. But I am flying out to Los Angeles on April 5th. And that Thursday, I'm interviewing Stephen Pressfield, the hit author of The Legend of Bagger Vance and Gates of Fire. I like to plug that because it makes me feel badass. And then that day, later in the day, if you want to record it then, that'd be cool because I plan, and I know Katie also plans, on being drunk as hell at some point during that day. and at that point, I think it'd be perfect to do a vidcast.
Yeah, so to explain everyone, we're going to have... I'm not sure we'll actually have a podcast that you can get through iTunes. That remains to be seen, but we will have a video that you can download on the website, probably a half hour to an hour long video of us and there will be drinking in a studio audience of two females and two cats, one a male, one a female. A diverse.
And the two females are extraordinarily hot, by the way.
And
girlfriend Katie and girlfriend Amber, they're too hot for television.
So it'll be our first live studio audience and video cast. And I think what I'm planning on doing is, if we can't get the podcast to work, I'll have a special video message that gets sent to everyone's iTunes and iPod saying to stop listening and go download the video.
That's a good idea. And I think also, what topics are we going to explore during this podcast?
I don't know.
What are we actually going to be talking about?
I don't know.
I don't know.
It'll just be, we just do the same thing we always do, just with drinking involved.
And based on the last time that we had a special event based around drinking, we used to do those drunk discussions. What were those we used to do on our old website?
Yeah, they're called drunk discussions.
Yeah, and those were the best. And so, what you have to look forward to is, we'll start with a topic, and then look forward to tangents that are unparalleled by any other tangents you can think of. And then, at some point, we'll wrap up the show and realize we've gotten off the tangent so far that there's no going back to the original topic. It's pretty much how they always work. So, and you get to see both of us. And I know a lot of our just how hot this Native American-looking gentleman of myself and the British fop that is Tanner. Anyway, I think that's another successful podcast in the bag, and we're only at like 50 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
So let's end this.
Peace.
Bye. Breaking my can, I let you go. Nothing I said, I think I meant it all, but I don't understand. This whole world's out of my head.
You have been listening to This Just In, recorded on Sunday, March 26, 2006, and distributed on Monday, March 27, 2006. For more information about this podcast, as well as other projects, please visit www.the-means.com. As a reminder, we'll be filming our first video podcast on April 6th. Please visit the website for more information.